KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nearly 1,000 Indian Health Service layoffs were rescinded Friday as tribal organizations from across the country advocate to protect the federal workforce serving Indian country. The layoffs are part of the Trump administration's effort to shrink the size of the federal workforce. More than a dozen tribal organizations sent a letter to the Office of Personnel Management and the administration on Friday, urging for the protection of federal employees serving Indian country. The letter raises concerns about what they say would be devastating impacts on essential services in tribal communities, including critical service disruption to healthcare and emergency services, and jobs with ripple effects on local economies. The groups are calling for full exemptions for employees in the Indian Health Service, Bureau of Indian Affairs, Bureau of Indian Education, and other federal offices that support tribes. The National Indian Health Board is among organizations to sign the letter. The group told Native News Online Sunday that the IHS layoffs were rescinded thanks at least in part to advocacy by the many tribal organizations. ICT reports new Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. verbally rescinded the IHS layoffs Friday evening. Tribal organizations are reminding officials that tribes have unique political status and the government has trust and treaty obligations. A recent report shows that in rural communities home to large numbers of American Indians, including in Montana, people are more likely to rely on Medicaid for health insurance across all ages. Kathleen Shannon has more.
About 23% of Montanans rely on Medicaid for their health coverage, but the four counties with the highest rates, roughly 40%, are all home to American Indian reservations. That's according to a report from the Georgetown Center for Children and Families on Medicaid's role in rural areas. Executive Director Joan Alker says that's a national pattern.
This is important because if Congress moves ahead to make large cuts, these areas and Indian country more generally will be in big trouble.
Alker says documents leaked from the House Budget Committee show it's considering cuts to Medicaid between $200 billion and $2.3 trillion. She adds the cuts are not a foregone conclusion. Jason Smith, executive director of the Montana Consortium for Urban Indian Health, says Medicaid provides health coverage for individuals while being a critical source of revenue for the urban Indian organizations to help sustain their operations.
I would say for the UIOs particularly had a lot of revenue coming from Medicaid, so it's really a great secondary source of funding that has helped their organizations run and provide services for communities.
As of January, more than 14,000 American Indians in Montana were enrolled in Medicaid expansion. I'm Kathleen Shannon.
An effort to improve response to reports of missing and murdered Indigenous people in Oregon is underway in the state legislature. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
State Representative Tana Sanchez is building on a 2019 MMIP bill she sponsored that created talking sessions between tribal communities and state agencies, including the Oregon State Police. That led to improved training and a tribal liaison in the OSP. Now Sanchez has a bill that aims to have Oregon's 9 federally recognized tribes and urban communities partner up with another state agency.
It's asking that we put a sort of intervention kind of situation in the Oregon Health Authority. They've already got established prevention models that they use. They already have the ability to get out to community. They already have the ability to bring folks into that thought process of, like, how do we fix this?
The bill is currently in front of the legislature's budget writing committee with an estimated price tag of $500,000 per year. She's concerned about whether federal funds could be tapped, given the uncertainty about the future of federal spending. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members serve to alleviate poverty while earning money for college and gaining professional skills. Rewarding service opportunities can be found at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
So it's just something that I had a lot of pride in. I always thought being a public servant was one of the best things that you could do.
Some federal workers who've been fired try to sort out what's next while others wait anxiously. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 17th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, sections of Bear Trail caused the Iditarod Star to move north to Fairbanks.
They were very concerned about the welfare of themselves, and breaking sleds, and taking care of their dogs.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Hundreds of Alaskans joined protests in communities across the state today as part of a nationwide President's Day demonstration opposing President Donald Trump's policies at home and abroad. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone has more.
In Juneau, Alaskans packed the plaza outside the state capitol before marching down Main Street. Many of the hundreds of protesters held signs opposing billionaire Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency. Slogans like Bad Doge, No One Voted for Elon, and Musk Must Go. Others called on Congress to assert its constitutional power to check Trump's moves to expand presidential authority. More demonstrators offered support for federal workers who have been fired as the administration purges employees from agencies. Others underscored the benefits the federal government provides to Alaskans. Federal spending makes up more than 40% of the current state budget. One National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration worker who declined to give her name because she fears retaliation held a sign saying Alaska needs NOAA. She says she spent 9 years in grad school and another 5 in postdoc programs, and now she's afraid she could be caught up in the mass firings.
I care about our mission. We're the gold standard of fisheries management. But more than that, like, NOAA provides weather services to rural communities in Alaska. We provide a lot of services to Native tribes and coastal communities, people with lack of resources and a need to understand how their environment's going to be changing.
Leaders from the Alaska Native Sisterhood and Brotherhood each spoke to the crowd, as did some Democratic state lawmakers. Here's Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Keel.
We have work to do. We have federal legislators to move on this issue. We need them to stand up. We need them to honor their oaths of office to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America. There is nothing less at stake than that.
Protests erupted at noon Monday across the state, including in Anchorage, Homer, Fairbanks, and Ketchikan. Nearly 250 people, that's about 7% of the population, attended a rally in the Southeast Alaska community of Petersburg. Among them was Celeste Fenter, who told local public radio station KFSK she had been recently fired as a secretary for the U.S. Forest Service.
I am not a parasite. These are not parasites. These are the best and the brightest in this community, and every one of them is a person I would pick for my team first and foremost every time. Make this stop. Do better.
The protests were part of a nationwide call to action by a group calling itself the 50-51 Movement. There were protests in cities across the country, from Boston to Orlando to Lincoln, Nebraska, and Jackson, Mississippi. Monday's protest followed an earlier, quote, day of action on February 5th. Organizers say they plan to continue demonstrating against the Trump administration in the years to come.
Save those signs. We're going to need them again.
With help from Hannah Flora in Petersburg, reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Many probationary employees of the federal government in Alaska got news late last week that they've been fired, and others are bracing for an email that they're sure is coming. It's part of an effort by President Trump and his appointed efficiency czar, Elon Musk, to shrink the federal workforce, save money, and root out what they say is an unaccountable bureaucracy. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin joins us now. And Liz, you reached out to some federal workers. What did you hear?
Yeah, I've heard from more than a dozen Alaskans affected either by the mass firings or the freeze on other federal spending that has left them in limbo. I spoke to a woman in Fairbanks who said she always wanted a job that felt meaningful to her, and she found it in federal service. She worked seasonal jobs for the federal government to get her foot in the door at her favorite agency, and she finally landed a year-round job less than a year ago. She didn't want us to use her name, and we're not naming her agency, but she said that in federal service, she could connect people to their place and to their community and help them navigate to available resources.
And I was really excited for this job. It was one that I could have held on to for, I think, a majority of my career because it had a really great career step progression. So it's just something that I had a lot of pride in. I always thought being a public servant was one of the best things that you could do.
She'd been checking her email with apprehension, and she made it through the workday Thursday, so she thought maybe she was safe. But at 5:30 that evening, after hours, she got an email from an official she'd never heard of telling her she was out of a job, effective immediately. But she's just one example of a story that's being played out across Alaska. Let me tell you about another federal employee I spoke to, and she, last I checked, was still expecting the dreaded email. Kaya Clotter didn't mind us using her name. She's a wildlife biologist at Denali National Park.
This is my 10th year in Denali, working different kinds of positions throughout that time, but it's the place that I've made my home. It's where I have my community, my partner.
So you can hear, despite her long work experience at the Park Service, she's a probationary employee. And I heard from others like this. Some of the probationary workers were longtime employees who were recently promoted. So they're vulnerable to this mass firing because they're new in this particular post. And that's the case with her.
What exactly does this particular wildlife biologist do?
She's the lead technician on a study of wolves and caribou that began in 1986, so long, long before her. She's very proud of her work. As she puts it, she helps steward one of the longest-running large mammal data sets in the world. I spoke to her as she was driving to Anchorage for a pre-planned vacation, which she says she never would have taken if she knew what was coming. And Casey, before she left, she said she stayed late at work on her computer to make sure that all of her data are available to other scientists in case she's, fired and can never log on again.
It was a mad, sad scramble trying to figure out, if this is really it, what do I need to do to make sure that this work that I'm super passionate about can continue, without having these sort of things be erased or locked away.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate here. The government is running huge deficits. It has to cut somewhere. Why should the taxpayers pay for this science research?
Her answer is that Denali National Park is a national asset. It draws visitors from all over the world, and they spend money that adds to the regional economy, to the Alaska economy. And the highlight for all of those visitors, as far as I know, is the opportunity to see wildlife. Her data, she says, supports the research that helps ensure those populations remain with us.
So she's expecting she'll be laid off, but doesn't know yet. What other kinds of federal workers did you talk to?
I talked to a civil servant with what, sounded to me like a pretty bureaucratic title. But her voice broke when she explained how her work literally saves lives and property. She was laid off by email last week, and I spoke to people whose jobs rely on grant funding that's frozen. Some said their contacts at the agencies aren't responding or they just don't have any information. I talked to the wife of a federal employee who's not quitting, but his department is thinning out. He's got a lot more work to do than before, and he's really stressed out, and his wife sounded really worried that he's going to have a heart attack.
Jeez. Well, do we know how many federal jobs in Alaska are going to be lost in all of this?
We don't yet. There are estimates of 1,200 or so federal workers who are on probation, but not all of them have gotten the email. Senator Lisa Murkowski spoke Friday about dozens of Alaskans fired, maybe over 100, but she hasn't gotten solid answers about numbers either.
Was she critical of the job losses?
Yes, she shares the goal of reducing the size of federal government, but she says this is indiscriminate and inefficient and harmful to the workers themselves and to those who expect, you know, a functioning National Park Service and other government offices.
Well, I mean, that's Murkowski. She's been critical of Trump in the past, but what about the other two Republicans representing Alaska in Congress?
Senator Dan Sullivan has praised President Trump on social media for several things, but hasn't mentioned the firing of probationary employees, from what I saw. And that's the same for Congressman Nick Begich. Begich, interestingly, is holding a tele-town hall tonight, and it'll be interesting to hear if he gets many calls on this.
All right, Liz, thanks for that. That was Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a project to install EV fast charging stations in Fairbanks is in limbo.
I'm using the word pause right now because I have hopes that we can get this back on track.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in.
Join Alaska's only statewide live call-in forum to discuss the issues affecting your life. From politics to science and culture, breaking down the headlines with me, Lori Townsend, our expert guests, and you, our live callers. Talk on air with the week's guests or email questions before or during the live broadcast to talk@alaskapublic.org. That's Talk of Alaska, weekly on your local public radio station.
The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race will now start in Fairbanks, not Willow, due to a lack of snow, race officials announced today. The last-minute change follows alarms raised by some mushers over the weekend who said stretches of the trail were not safe for their teams. Andy Angstman is the musher representative on the Iditarod's board of directors. He says dozens of mushers called him with concerns.
I got lots of calls, texts, and emails from folks that had seen those videos and pictures from the Iron Dog, and they were very concerned about the welfare of themselves and breaking sleds and taking care of their dogs. But I talked to dozens of people over the weekend that were really, really worried.
The portion of trail that race officials have now deemed impassable is the so-called Farewell Burn, outside of the checkpoint in Nikolai, about a quarter of the way into the 1,000-mile race. Iron Dog snow machine racers just traveled that part of the trail. It's known for low snow, but a recent aerial photo shows particularly snow-free and rough terrain.
That was on just really, really rough trail that after this weekend and talking to folks that had seen it in person, we decided it wasn't safe. So that's why the decision was made.
In a statement today, race officials said they still plan to hold the parade-like ceremonial start in Anchorage on Saturday, March 1st. 2 days later, on Monday, March 3rd, the 33 teams will officially start their race out of Fairbanks and head to the Nome finish line. This will be the fourth time in Iditarod history that mushers are leaving from Fairbanks. Teams last raced out of the interior city in 2017 due to poor trail conditions through the Alaska Range. A plan to install electric vehicle charging stations in the Alaska interior is on hold. That's because the Trump administration just paused a $5 billion federal program intended to expand clean energy infrastructure. As Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, electric vehicle users in the region are feeling the pinch.
Kirby Hobley is charging up his olive green electric Volvo at one of Fairbanks's only fast charging stations. Many electric vehicle or EV users elect to charge up at home, which can take many hours. High voltage, fast charging stations, like the one Hobley's car is plugged into, juice up the battery faster. But Hobley has to share that outlet with about 150 other EV users in town.
I really like my EV, but the infrastructure is not here for it. It makes it much more stressful to have it. But I don't want to go back to something that just like pollutes. I mean, like air.
Hobley's Volvo still pollutes, since most of the electricity from Fairbanks's grid comes from fossil fuels. But experts say an EV powered purely by electricity from a coal-fired power plant is still better for the environment than a car powered by gasoline. Alaska's demand for EVs is projected to grow at a rate of up to around 60% per year, according to the Alaska Energy Authority. The fleet is mostly concentrated in Anchorage and Juneau, where there's a lot more infrastructure to support them. But many EV owners in the interior, like Hobley, are starved for a charge. Compared to gas stations, fast charging stations are scarce on the road system. And reviewers on PlugShare, a mobile app that's basically Yelp for EV charging stations, say the few that exist between Fairbanks and Anchorage are hard to use or don't work at all.
I mean, it's pretty bleak. Like the ones, whatever company they have at the Three Bears, like their fast chargers don't work. And there's been times like when I've had to get towed like to Anchorage because otherwise I would have been sitting there all night.
There's a plan to address that problem. The State Energy Authority and the Transportation Planning Organization for Fairbanks want to install almost 100 EV ports in Fairbanks and more up and down the Parks and Richardson highways. And that could have begun as early as this summer with $52 million in funding from the federal National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, or NEVI. But in early February, the Trump administration put NEVI under review, effectively halting all of its new projects. Jackson Fox directs FAST, the Fairbanks Transportation Organization. He says the future of the Fairbanks end of the project has been thrown into uncertainty.
We're worried about whether or not we'll actually get a federal reimbursement for that work. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and we are waiting on further direction and guidance from our Federal Highway Division office in Alaska as to the risks moving forward.
That federal agency could not be reached in time for publication, but a memo dated February 6th said it's updating the program to align with current Department of Transportation priorities. Tim Leach is with Launch Alaska, one of the project's nonprofit partners, as well as an EV owner himself. He says, despite the uncertainty from the executive orders, this is an important moment to modernize the state.
You know, a lot of our folks here in Alaska are really interested in self-reliance. And so this is a topic that is near and dear to many, but we need to make sure that we have publicly available charging infrastructure to enable that consumer choice.
And he says, despite the infrastructure lag, Alaskan EV owners are saving money on fuel. And some are even running their homes off their cars.
There's actually the ability to then send the electrons back through the wires in the other direction. The benefit that that can bring for folks who are in a remote cabin is that when the grid goes down, and of course we have plenty of experience with that in this winter, you can then use your electric vehicle battery to sustain the loads in your home or perhaps the loads in your small business.
With the NEVI funding in question, the Fairbanks charging station project is in limbo. But Jackson Fox is holding on to hope and looking at other sources of funding.
I'm using the word pause right now because I have hopes that we can get this back on track. So provided we're using a different funding source, we might still be safe to move forward. But again, we feel some risk.
The office was looking for places around Fairbanks to host the new chargers, but that's on pause now, too. The Alaska Energy Authority says the federal funding freeze also affected progress on its project to put charging stations on the road system, but declined to comment further. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. The Bristol Bay Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will meet to develop federal wildlife proposals and discuss other subsistence-related issues. The public is invited to participate in the meeting February 18th and 19th in King Salmon.
More information at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Near the end of its two-week meeting, the Alaska Board of Fisheries considered a proposal to close off a small bay north of Sitka to commercial herring fishing. Proposal 179 earned considerable support from Sitka's subsistence community, but ultimately was rejected by the Board of Fish on a split vote. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
Promisla Bay is a cove about 10 miles northwest of Sitka. In the last few years, as schools of herring have become more heavily concentrated in areas farther from town, the bay has become increasingly important for subsistence harvesters to harvest herring eggs on branches. Last fall, a traditional harvester proposed the Board of Fish close the area to the commercial sacro herring fishery. Sitka's Fish and Game Advisory Committee vacillated on its support for the proposal, initially voting it down in November before reversing its decision in January. It showed up at the board's table with support from the local committee and the public. At the Board of Fish meeting, traditional harvester Paulette Moreno called for the Promisla Bay area to be protected.
We have been cultivating this area to come back to more of an abundance for our traditional harvest. It is closer to town. It is safer for our harvesters on small skiffs to be able to reach the bay. This is an area that is safer, more economically feasible, and that produces herring eggs that we would feed our family.
Advocates for the proposal noted state data that shows few commercial harvests have been taken from Promisla Bay in the last decade. At the same time, the subsistence harvest has continued to supply more eggs to communities around the state. Tora Zamora of Ketchikan visited Sitka to help with the harvest last year.
It really is the capital of the herring. It's just full of life. And I was just so inspired by all the life that was happening and the opportunity to participate in culture and feed our community throughout Southeast Alaska, not even just Sitka, and provide eggs for here in Ketchikan too, because they provide for so many throughout Southeast Alaska in Sitka, Koan.
Several commercial seiners pushed back on the proposal. Permit holder Marcus Nelson of Metlakatla said it was unnecessary, as commercial fishermen don't go into the bay if they see subsistence sets.
If somebody is subsistence fishing in the area, every permit holder immediately moves out of the area. So it does not bother the area where they're subsisting. And they can subsist in the closed area, which is 10 miles that the permit holders already relinquished quite a number of years ago.
Some board members were swayed by the testimony in favor of closing the bay to commercial fishing. Board Chair Merrick Carlson Van Dort called it an exceptional circumstance of the subsistence economy.
But I think the more I've listened to this discussion, the more hard over I've become, yes, that this is important. And not only for that reason, but also because of the safety considerations that we also heard in public testimony. This is relatively easily accessible, you know, calmer waters areas, not out in the open. You can get there in a small open water skiff and you can harvest safely in this area. At least that's what I heard in public testimony. I don't think it's unreasonable, especially considering the low use that this bay has had in the commercial fishery in at least the last 10 years. And I'm a solid yes at this point.
But board member Tom Carpenter said the low commercial use of the area demonstrated that the proposal wasn't necessary.
If people would have come up and said we can't go in there because the harvest on the commercial side is too much, they're interfering with, you know, our subsistence activities, I just didn't hear that. So I think that this is kind of a unique situation around Sitka, and obviously I take it very seriously, but I mean, until it can be demonstrated that there is a real conflict, I just can't support it.
Ultimately, the proposal failed on a 3-4 vote. Of all the herring proposals it considered, the Alaska Board of Fisheries approved only 3, all submitted by state fishery managers. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Soldotna's annual Winter Craft Beer Festival celebrated its 10th anniversary on Saturday. The Frozen River Fest spotlights brewers from around the state and is coupled with live music, bonfires, and fireworks at Soldotna Creek Park. KDLL's Hunter Morrison spoke with some of this year's attendees and has this audio postcard.
I've been to every one of these ever since they started it, so it's a lot of fun.
I can't believe it's been 10 years since we started doing this. I think I've been every year. I don't think I've missed an event.
I think it is wonderful to have outdoor activities this time of year, and it includes beer.
And it's so neat how they have the fireplaces, you know, the fire pits around, and everybody's got a place to stay warm.
We got young families here. We've got, you know, older people here. It's a true mix of the community.
Nobody's getting crazy or out of control. It's not like it's a beer thing, but it's not like, you know, your typical beer type of event.
I did not realize that this many people lived in this town. This is the most young people I've seen in one place since I've moved here in August.
Just getting out here in the fresh, cold weather, it feels good. It just feels good. And a lot of the community shows up.
It's just kind of a sign of spring for me of like, okay, we've got a couple more months and then we're gonna be in warmer weather.
It's great, like, publicity, essentially. And everybody loves all the breweries. They're all small town, hometown folks around here, so.
I think that the craft beer scene in Alaska is something that I really enjoy, and it's something we kind of connect communities together with.
The different breweries are wonderful. It gets their names out a lot as well, but I feel like a lot of what the Riverfest is special to me is just bringing people in the community together.
It's not just like a big macro brewery where you can't see the faces of people, you can go and talk to them.
It's just being able to see like what else is out there, right? So like they got people from Fairbanks, they got people from Cooper Landing. Normally you might not make the trip to go up there and check those places out.
It's amazing how many really good beers don't get out of Alaska, because I don't think that I've ever seen an Alaskan beer on the East Coast. So I'm definitely going to have to pack my car with some Alaskan beers to take back with me.
The dynamics of the homebrews that have gone commercial is phenomenal. I mean, people love what they're creating, and it's not your standard.
Everybody puts on their best stuff. I mean, the fur hats and the parkas, and it's just so neat. And then looking through the crowd to see if you recognize a friend here.
Let's do 10 plus more. This is a good event, and good to have so many people out and about, and not just sitting at home and getting cabin fever.
It brings us all together. Because I sure don't see all these people at Safeway.
We're the biggest state, but we have like the biggest small town people around here. And so this is really important for everybody to kind of just be together as one and kind of support each other.
I really appreciate that there are things in this small community that can still bring people together, even in the wintertime when nothing's open and nobody's doing anything.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone in Juneau, Hannah Floor in Petersburg, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Ava White in Anchorage, Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, Catherine Rose in Sitka, and Hunter Morrison in Soldotna. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years.
The Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, offering guests hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and the Red Lantern Steak and Spirits Restaurant. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media. Yeah.
If you have to walk away, go slowly. If you just can't stay another day, just let me pretend that we're not at our end. Go slowly. If you have to say goodbye, say it softly. Don't tell my heart you're leaving. Don't delay. Let me start my grieving. You've already broke me in two. If you have to leave me, if we're really through, I never thought I could feel this way again. I never dreamed a love could grow and then come to an end. I never thought my heart could break all this way. Nothing I can do, nothing you can say. If you have to go, go quietly. If you have to say goodbye, go on and leave. If you have to walk away and get down, if it's got to be this way, please, please go quietly. Yeah. If you have to go, baby, go quietly. Ooh, oh, 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 yeah, yeah. Please go quietly. Ooh, oh, 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 oh. Ooh.
Party, party, party. feel all the shine my name. Watch out for me lover, and me want to feel me friend. Till the very end, till the very end.
track back. Bring that funky track back. Bring that funky track back. Bring that funky track back. Oh, bring it, baby. Don't stop.
Thank you. No. nothing can make this one stop. Toes be tapping, fingers snapping, hands flapping, my mouth rapping, talking about I'm cold lapping. Shut up and do the wop. Use what you got, show me you're on the floor.
Talk